Hello and welcome to the Supercast. I'm your host, Superintendent Anthony Godfrey. In this special edition of the Supercast, we want to make you aware of what Jordan School District is doing in cooperation with the Salt Lake County Health Department to plan for the coronavirus, or COVID-19, and to help prevent the spread of disease and keep students, faculty, and staff healthy. This episode of the Supercast was recorded on March 2nd, 2020, and the information presented is current as of that date. We'll hear from Salt Lake County Health Department Epidemiology Manager Eileen Risk regarding COVID-19. We'll also speak with Head of Custodial Services Steve Peart about what's being done in schools to help prevent the spread of disease and illness. And we'll speak with Ross Menlove about the digital learning capacities that are built in here at Jordan School District. Joining us now on the Supercast is Salt Lake County epidemiologist Eileen Risk. Thank you very much for taking the time. Can we just start by asking, what would you like parents to know about coronavirus?
I think it's important for parents to understand that while this is a new virus, and it's a novel virus, so that's scary. But the thing to keep in mind is there's some real simple steps that parents can take to prevent spread of respiratory illnesses, including coronavirus and including influenza. And those are good hand washing, frequently and thoroughly.
So I know it might seem obvious to just ask how to wash your hands, but are there some specific tips on how to wash your hands thoroughly to be sure that disease is not spread?
Definitely. It's very important when you're washing your hands some people sing a song in their head or out loud, depending if they can sing, but make sure that you wash your hands for 20 seconds and that you suds up. It's the friction when you're washing your hands. Make sure that you wash the tips of your fingers, your thumbs, in between your fingers, up through your watch. Take off any rings if you're wearing them to get underneath the rings. But the duration is really important.
So the duration and really washing every area of your hands. Mm-hmm. How frequently should you be washing your hands, or when should you be washing your hands?
That's a very good point. The other thing I want parents to recognize is that with hand washing, it's a good prevention measure, but it's also important to stay home when you are sick. And it's always important to wash your hands after you've sneezed or coughed. So you hopefully aren't exposing other people if you're ill. So you're in your own home, but you're making sure that you wash your hands after you sneeze or cough. It's important to wash your hands before you eat and after you use the bathroom.
Wash your hands before you eat and after you use the restroom. Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned staying home if you have symptoms. What are the symptoms that parents ought to be watching for to keep their child home?
That's very challenging because with coronavirus, and it's called COVID-19 is the designation for this virus, the clinical disease, they need to watch for symptoms of fever, cough, and difficulty breathing. Those are fairly common symptoms. So a lot of different illnesses might present with those symptoms. So it's hard to know whether or not it's influenza or another respiratory pathogen. But if the child is sick, it's important to contact their healthcare provider. And it's a good idea to not just show up at the healthcare provider if they have those symptoms, but to call ahead. And then the healthcare provider can instruct them as far as when they're coming in, they might want to put them in an isolated room, put on a mask if they're coughing. It's always a good idea. It's also important to recognize that right now with our situation, as it's probably a lot more common if they've had some sort of known exposure. Now that's going to change in a hurry. We expect community transmission, but for right now, as far as if a child presented with those symptoms, some of the questions that we would ask as public health is, have you traveled? Have you traveled to any of the areas that where we know there is known sustained community transmission? Have you had contact with someone who has traveled that may be under investigation as having COVID-19? Those are good indicators that would kind of ratchet up the concern level for a parent.
So if a parent finds that their child has those symptoms, they should keep them home. They should call their healthcare provider. And one of the additional questions will be related to whether there's some level of exposure through travel or through contact with someone who has traveled. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. And then the healthcare provider with those list of symptoms would test for a variety of more commonly seen things that are circulating in our community right here in Salt Lake County now, including influenza and other respiratory pathogens. If all of those test negative, then depending on the risk factors associated with the child, we might move on to testing for COVID-19. But currently, the testing around this virus is very strict. And so there has to be some sort of risk-based exposure. We're not just routinely testing people who present with those symptoms.
So if you have the symptoms, but there's no reason to believe that you've been exposed, you wouldn't necessarily be tested unless everything else was eliminated as a possibility.
That's correct. And that's why we do think, especially fair number of people that have this disease don't have really severe symptoms. Some do, but a lot have very mild symptoms. And so that's why it could be missed and not recognized. But that's also why we have to find that balance because of the resources. We need to make sure that we have the testing capability for the people who are truly at risk.
I see. So it's reserving testing capability for when you really have those populations that are at risk.
For right now, because the testing is limited. We hope in the future there will be a commercial test, and it will probably be just part of it. Right now, there's a panel of tests for when somebody presents with respiratory illness. At some point, that might be added to that panel.
So we talked about people being at risk, and I've heard that children are less at risk than some other populations. Can you speak to that, please?
Yeah, we're not quite sure. The data around this virus is still being compiled to better understand age-specific risk factors, but there have been a handful of children that recently tested positive across the globe. But clearly, most of the cases have occurred among adults. And we're especially aware of the adults that have more severe illness, and those tend to be a more senior population or people that have other risk factors or other comorbidities like diabetes or heart disease.
I started the last question with, I've heard, and there's a lot of rumor going around and there's a lot of speculation. Where would you say parents ought to go for the best, most reliable, most up-to-date information about what's happening?
So the best place to research information, there's a couple places, and one is Salt Lake County Health Department website. The reason that's a good place is we link all of our information to the Centers for Disease Control, which is kind of the premier place to look for information. If a parent is more interested and wants to dig a little bit deeper from a global perspective, the World Health Organization has an excellent website.
So the World Health Organization, the Center for Disease Control, and Salt Lake County Health. Those are three sources for good information.
Yes, those three, as well as the Utah Department of Health.
We read about other countries where school has been closed or public gatherings have been limited. If that were to happen in Utah, and obviously it has not happened yet, but if that were to happen at some point, how would that information come out? Who would be the authority that would make that decision?
So we would take that information very seriously, and it would be based upon our epidemiological information we're collecting, and we're doing that on a daily basis. We're continuing to monitor people right now. We're looking at their risk factors, where they've been. We're continuing to assess any commonalities, and so we would piece that together. And as a local health department, as far as quarantining or shutting down mass events, not going to movies, not going to church, not going to school, would come as a directive from Salt Lake County Health Department. So our local health officer would have the ability, based upon good, sound evidence, to make that decision. And then that would be communicated very quickly to the right people, to the right superintendents in the school districts.
Sure. And I've always appreciated the process in working with Salt Lake County Health. You've always been very responsive to our questions and done a great job of providing consistent and systematic means of providing information so that everyone has the right information and the same information at the same time. So I would anticipate that would be the same in case there's any problem.
Yes, we definitely would want to make sure from a consistency standpoint that we're all on the same page and we'd release that information at the same time with a heads up to all of the people that need to know. Agencies, our partners, our healthcare providers, as well as provide that information to the public through the media. And we would continue to assess this as we go through it. This is not the first pandemic that we've been involved with. In 2009, you know, heavily involved with the influenza pandemic. And we continue to exercise pandemic preparedness on a regular basis.
What would you say to families who are experiencing a high level of anxiety around the possibility of COVID-19 affecting their family?
I think for parents with a lot of anxiety, my best advice would be to rely on credible sources of information. Facebook, some of the social media aren't always the most credible sources of information. So I would take a deep breath and really think whether or not their children are at risk. And so far, we haven't had a single case where exposure has occurred in Utah.
We talked about personal hygiene, but is there a level of cleaning that ought to be happening in the home to help prevent the spread of disease as well?
Whenever anyone's sick with respiratory illness, it's important to make sure, in addition to the good hand washing, the things we've talked about, and self-isolation, that any touch surfaces are cleaned. There's not really a magic answer for how often, but just thorough cleaning as you would typically do in your household, and washing linens frequently, and making sure that any kind of light switches, remotes, anything where somebody might touch it and someone else might come along and touch the same piece of equipment, that those things are cleaned. I wouldn't go overboard because you can get pretty frenetic about cleaning, but it's just important to have things as germ-free as possible.
We've been speaking with Eileen Risk, an epidemiologist with Salt Lake County Health Department. If parents want more information, where can they go?
So parents can visit saltlakehealth.org for information that for Salt Lake County Health Department, and that will also link them to the Centers for Disease Control.
Thank you very much. I'm sure you're very busy at Salt Lake County Health, and we really appreciate your taking the time to be with us.
Thank you.
We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, Jordan School District Director of Custodial Services, Steve Peart, will join us.
Do you want ideas for being happier and healthier? I'm McKinley Withers, Health and Wellness Specialist for Jordan School District. Please join us every week for Wellness Wednesday. It is a feature on the Jordan School District website that offers free and simple tips for improving your health and wellness. We cover a variety of topics like reducing stress, better eating habits, and finding more time to build better relationships. Check out Wellness Wednesday every week on the Jordan School District website at jordandistrict.org. For additional health and wellness resources, visit wellness.jordandistrict.org.
We're joined now by Steve Peart, the Director of Custodial and Energy Services for Jordan School District. Steve, can you tell us a little bit about the routine cleaning that is done in schools of all levels?
Okay, well, our routine cleaning that we have job cards for all of the sweepers and full-time staff, and those job cards will take them through step-by-step of what should be done every day.
So it's very organized.
Yes.
And is it the JCAWS system that evaluates whether those procedures are being followed?
Yes, it is. It's we call it the JCAWS, which is Jordan Custodial Operating System.
It's very structured, and right down to the minute, what's expected, how much time should be spent on each task, and there's routine cleaning that helps prevent the spread of illness and disease. Can you tell us about some of the routines that help prevent that?
Yeah. For example, what we call a light duty specialist, if you look down their structure on their routines, number 5 says disinfect phones in assigned area, and then it says spray disinfectant on the cloth and then wipe down the phones. Number 6 says disinfect classroom sinks and drinking fountains. Number 8 says disinfect all classroom doors, doorknobs, switches, and places that the public would touch.
So okay. There's a very deliberate process to clean up those high-touch areas.
Yes, yeah. That's and then when we go out to inspect a building, we will look at doorknobs, door casings, because a lot of times the kids will grab the door casing to swing around the door, so we make sure that those areas have been cleaned.
I can picture that.
Yes.
Yeah. So there are a lot of areas that just get this regular routine cleaning. But when there's something more intense, sometimes when we've been concerned about a particular school, there is a fogging procedure that we've used before that's kind of fascinating to really clean the entire school at a deeper level. Tell me more about that.
Yeah, if the Department of Health tells us about a concern, probably the next level of cleaning would be we'd go in and we can fog that building and go through the classrooms, go through the buses and that. That's kind of the next level of cleaning, and that would be recommended from the health department.
What particular procedures involved? It's a special machine.
Yeah, it's just like a handheld sprayer. We also have a backpack that we can use, and it just puts out a very fine mist. As you just walk into the room, you'll spray from the innermost part of the room and kind of back yourself out as you spray that.
And on rare occasion, when there has been an issue at a school, we've been able to clean the entire school and ensure that it's safe from illness.
Yes. Yeah, we've done that before on schools. We've also done it on buses.
And that's done as a precaution under the direction of Salt Lake County Health.
So if the health department contacts us and says there's a particular health issue at a school, we can go into what we'd call the next level of disinfecting. And that's where we use these foggers to go in and fog the classroom or the school bus or the entire building if needed.
What substance is used in the fogger?
Okay, the fogger has a disinfectant in it. It's designed to be able to disinfect around surfaces. So, for example, if I was to hold my phone here and spray it, it would also wrap around and hit the back of the phone. So it can go places that would take hundreds of hours to physically wipe down. It can cover the entire room.
And you've done this, like you said, with classrooms, schools, buses, mm-hmm. as necessary.
Yes.
How do we protect custodians and sweepers from getting sick themselves as they're cleaning up?
Each task that a custodian or sweeper is assigned to do will have a level of personal protective equipment that is required for that task, and the district provides that equipment for each one of them.
Depending on the task and depending on the chemical that's being used, there is equipment to help keep the employee safe from infection themselves.
Yes, that's correct.
All of the cleaning that you've described and all of the procedures you've described, from disinfecting to fogging, clean up what's already there. But really, the best preventive measure is hand washing.
Yes.
And so there's going to be a lot more hand washing, hopefully, because that's what's being encouraged. 20 seconds at least, and we want more and more people to be washing their hands more frequently. That means we need more supplies. How are we for paper towels and soap and supplies in general for cleaning?
The warehouse generally keeps several months ahead of what we need, but in addition to that, we've ordered even more to stockpile.
So we already have plenty of lead, and we've ordered even more.
Yes, we have.
We appreciate Steve Peart taking the time to join us. Up next, we'll talk about our online curriculum and ability to provide instruction to students staying at home if necessary.
In Jordan School District, the possibilities are endless for anyone looking to grow with a team of professionals working together to provide the very best for students in education. If you're looking for a great job with great pay and benefits in a supportive environment, head to workatjordan.org and find your future career. In Jordan School District, people come for the job and stay for the adventure. Explore the many options. Apply today at workatjordan.org.
Welcome back to the Supercast. We have with us today Ross Menlove, Administrator over Digital Learning in the Teaching and Learning Department, and he's here to talk with us about how the district has prepared to provide digital learning, if that's necessary, in case of an outbreak in Utah of the coronavirus, but really in lots of other circumstances, just to provide flexibility to parents and students. If for some reason students were required to stay home because of a coronavirus outbreak or some other issue, we're well positioned to provide deep, meaningful learning from home.
Exactly. We're pretty much, I would say, one of the most prepared districts in the state to be able to provide continued instruction to students, and students would not miss a beat of that core level knowledge that they need to progress in their learning. They would have that right there at home, and teachers are trained enough to be able to do that right away.
And in addition to having that digital specialist at each school, we also have a variety of digital experts at the district level that can provide additional support to teachers.
Exactly. We have my team works really closely with every school. We're in interactions with every principal and all the teachers, and we could easily push out content within a matter of minutes and hours to be able to train teachers easily on what to do and how to go about providing that content.
Ross, can you just give us a little bit of an overview of kind of the training that's happened and some of the options that are available to teachers that can allow them to teach remotely online?
Yeah, that's a great question. So this last year, when we had the previous snow day for 2019, we provided a blended learning course for teachers. And pretty much every teacher in Jordan District participated in that course. And as we looked at that, what we decided for this year, we have transitioned our professional development to be more of a school-based professional development. So we have a teacher at every single school in Jordan District that is a digital teacher leader. They're a specialist in digital learning. They come and get trained from us each month to be able to use different digital learning and blended learning techniques and teaching tools within the classroom. And we've seen a huge jump in the number of people that are trained in digital learning. An example would be we have hundreds of teachers every month that are currently participating in training that could be used if students weren't at the school physically, but they could still continue their learning at home.
So every teacher received blended learning training through a blended learning course last year,
yep,
as a baseline. But we also have hundreds of teachers and more teachers receiving additional advanced digital learning support and training so that they can expand their use of digital learning. And beyond that, we have a teacher that's assigned to every school that's a specialist.
Exactly. And about half of our school principals at all levels have participated in a blended and digital learning course for administrators. So they're able to lead different activities for teachers to participate in faculty meetings or different trainings that they're providing to their staff. So pretty much every teacher in Jordan District is participating currently in some form of blended learning, either through their school, through the district trainings, whatever it might be. They all have examples of using it. They've all participated as a student and also as a teacher.
And that's a good point. Participating as a student and as a teacher gives you a different perspective, what the student experience is like and what the teacher experience is like.
Exactly. They're able to, for themselves, evaluate on their end what would good teaching look like if it was completely online, and what does good teaching look like if I use different parts of blended learning and technology within the classroom.
Now, we have a number of different platforms and programs that are available to us to help enhance online learning. Can you describe a few of those for us?
Exactly. So we use a couple of different learning management systems. There's Google Classroom and then also Canvas. Within each of these learning management systems, there's ways to interact for students to interact with a teacher and also for students to interact with students. The great thing about Canvas and a learning management system is we're allowing kids to be able to design and create their own content. They're not just getting on and consuming more content. They're being active creators of their own content, being able to share their learning, being able to provide feedback in real time. A couple other tools that we really focus quite a bit on this year is Adobe. Every one of our students in Jordan District from 7th grade up has free access to Adobe.
And Adobe is not just creating PDFs. Adobe
exactly.
is a way to provide interactive instruction. Can you describe that a little bit more?
Yeah, so they all have access to the Adobe Creative Suite. So they get Photoshop, they get Illustrator, and they can go on and create their version of the content that the teacher is asking, but do it in their own way and create that and be able to get trained in a product that they could use those skills in different areas, not just only at school, but also in their own life and their own interest.
You talked about Google Classroom and Canvas, which are two ways to create courses and classroom experiences online. I know we also have access to Nearpod as a district. Can you tell me what Nearpod involves?
So Nearpod, what they've done is taken a traditional PowerPoint, and now they've made the students an interactive piece within that PowerPoint. So instead of the student just sitting there watching the teacher go through the PowerPoint slide, the student now is an active participant in that PowerPoint. So the teacher might share some information, and then the next slide, the student participates in an activity where they might draw their thinking, or they might respond to a question. A great example would be like with math. So the teacher might teach them like a math concept, then the next slide they have to draw their thinking. They have to draw what would that look like for them. Or with reading, they have to read a passage and highlight different parts within that text. So Nearpod allows for creativity. And we just this last month, we did a Nearpodapalooza for Jordan District. And we had over 100 teachers come one day, and all of them get trained on Nearpod, not just the basics, but also just advanced and how to use that tool to interact with students so students are active participants in their learning.
You talked about Canvas earlier, and one of the aspects of Canvas that I like, and perhaps this is true of other programs as well, parents can get involved and they can be logged in right along with the student and be very involved in their child's learning.
Exactly. You know, we have Canvas and parents can see what's happening. They can see what their students are doing. The same with Nearpod. All the Nearpods we would push out, parents could access those Nearpods and see what the learning is. And they could be active participants with their child in being able to go through the content, be able to ask them questions. And the wonderful thing is that with technology and with Canvas, and as parents work with that with their kids, the parents are able to see the type of questions and the type of learning, so they can take those questions and use them in other areas of life and other areas where they have conversations with their children.
It allows parents to be involved at a deeper level in a child's learning rather than simply logging on to Skyward and looking up grades and that sort of thing. Parents can really be involved in the content and see where a student may be struggling and provide some support.
Exactly. It allows parents to be right there next to them and also learning with them. That's the great thing with the digital content is the parents can also participate in it.
Appreciate the work you've done in the last few years, Ross, moving us forward in digital learning and in our capability and helping provide that flexibility for students and teachers. And hopefully we won't need to use it district-wide in the case of an emergency, but if we do, we're well prepared to do so.
Well, thank you. You know, I think the message that we communicate to teachers every time we meet with them is we want students to become active creators using technology,
right. Not
just passive consumers. When they use technology, when it comes to learning and teaching here in Jordan District, they're actively creating. They're showing their learning in different ways and in ways that have never been done before, but are ways that are needed as they continue through their life, and especially with the increases in technology and what's expected of them.
Great way of putting it. Active creators versus passive consumers. Thanks very much, Ross.
Thank you.
Thanks to everyone for being part of this special edition of the Supercast. And thanks to parents for supporting our efforts as Jordan School District works to keep students and staff healthy in a productive learning environment. And remember, education is the most important thing you'll do today. We'll see you out there.